Let's call this meeting to order. I'm going to share my screen. Okay, this is the TOD Advisory Group, December 21st meeting. And first thing we're going to do is review meeting notes from last month. We're going to see if there's any public comment. And then we have some discussion items tonight, debriefing and takeaways from the Portland Avenue station. We have a brief BRT presentation. And we have the crux of our meeting tonight is about the Puyallup Avenue project with a lead presentation by Mark DeAndrea, and then a discussion with the group. Talk about the schedule a little bit, and we have some communication items to go over. And tentative agenda for the future meetings. And there are some attachments that you all should have received. So that's what's happening tonight. Let's kick it off with, I hope you're all doing well, by the way. And getting ready for the holidays. So let's talk about the review of meeting notes from last month. And I'm going to just briefly go through these. We had a call to order. There were no public comments. And we discussed a little bit about chatting in our meetings. And we had a debrief on the ULI report that we discussed, and also we had a Puyallup Avenue discussion, and we talked about a couple of key points where we had no net loss of parking and making the corridor pedestrian-oriented. There was some concurrence with that. And further discussion about a holistic parking approach. And Mark's going to cover all of that in detail tonight. And as you know, Lee Huang mentioned in his email to everyone that this project has been pushed forward as a priority just because of some of the timing challenges with the funding. And so that's why we're tackling it in earnest tonight. And if we need to, with a special meeting. We'll see how that goes tonight. We might be able to get a consensus this evening. Then we had a Sound Transit Access brief discussion. Talked about the schedule. And go page down here. And we had a check-in with Mark from the Puyallup Avenue Design Project. It was brief. And so, again, tonight will be a more detailed presentation. Then we had a multi-jurisdictional roundtable with, it started off with Sound Transit providing an update on the Portland Avenue station design options. We had the Puyallup Tribe represented, Port of Tacoma, WashDOT, Pierce Transit, and then Josh Diekman of Public Works at Tacoma provided some context. There's a request for supportive data to define TOD, and I think I'm going to show you a couple of TOD definitions that I found on the FTA website. I'm going to bring that up tonight. And pros and cons from Port of Tacoma. Christine Wolf. We talked about the number of daily riders, and the assumption was there'd be no pedestrian bridge because it's not funded. And we talked about some safety elements, and I think that may come up again as we go further into the Puyallup Avenue, I'm sorry, the Portland Avenue station discussion. So we talked about future agenda and meetings, developer focus group and so on, and quiet zone update. We'll have more on that tonight. And then we were adjourned a little after 6. So I like to try to keep it to 2 hours. Sometimes we go over 10, 15 minutes. I hope that's okay, but we'll try to stick to about 2 hours. Go back to the top. Lee Wong, any public comments from last month?
No, Chair, did not receive any written comments by 2 o'clock today. Chair, if I may, just a note that this is a large group, so we really don't do roll call or quorum call. But today we have a new member who is replacing an existing member. If you would like, you can ask. Her name is Laura. Let me try. Sven Karek. Chair, if you would like, you can ask her to introduce herself and ask her to describe who she replaces. Thank you.
That's great. Laura, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Laura Swanzerich. I'm the Commuter Production and Advocacy Coordinator at Downtown on the Go. So I'm replacing Amber Stanley, who recently left Downtown on the Go to go work for Pierce Transit on the BRT project. So very excited to get involved in this group. So thank you.
Great. Welcome. Glad to have you. All right, let's talk about, let's go to the next topic, which is the first action and discussion item, debriefing and takeaways from the Portland Avenue Station Roundtable. I'll just scroll down briefly to remind you what those were. Right here. We had Andrew Strobel, first of all, from the Puyallup Tribe. And at the end, at the end of all of these, I asked the presenters and the representatives of those various organizations and or departments to give us their take on which station they or location they preferred, whether it was the original Portland Avenue station to the east or the SPAN station spanning Portland Avenue a little further west. And I'm just going to briefly give you those, what I jotted down. The tribe preferred the original Portland Avenue station. The port was undecided and WashDOT was undecided. BRT preferred the SPAN station. So far that's one of each. I also asked the city of Tacoma representatives what they thought, and Josh represents Public Works, I believe, also said there is no recommendation from their department yet pending DEIS results. And I believe Brian from Planning said they're leaning towards the SPAN station. So I wanted to just summarize that. There's basically sort of two for the SPAN station and one for the original Portland Avenue station, the main design so far. So I will just start the discussion with that. Are there any other takeaways people want to bring up that they heard last month? And forgive me if I can't see your hand raised. I have a small screen, so I can't see everyone. So just go ahead and please start. Don, maybe you could bring up the fact, the pedestrian connection concern that you had sure. Across the freeway.
Yeah, I went out drove up and down the street. There are probably 4-foot diameter columns supporting the freeways or supporting the freeway above. And it really, you know, they call it the picket fence approach. When you see something at a parallel angle, I guess it is, it's very hard to see between the pickets. And here between the columns, I mean, it's a solid wall until you're almost perpendicular. And then you can start to see in those side spaces where pedestrians might walk. I don't think it's very right now anyway. It's certainly not a defensible space from a pedestrian safety standpoint. Maybe when it's widened and then you've got the Paris subway tiles and bright lights. But I think it really would take a tremendous amount to make those safe spaces if that's going to be the main pedestrian corridor. So I would like, you know, up north at Northgate, they got a bike pedestrian bridge over to Northgate. They were able to get the funding. So I think it's something we should really push for if there's going to be sufficient pedestrian demand to justify it. And when I say pedestrian, I'm also talking about bicycle.
So you're advocating strongly for the bridge and overhead connection.
Yeah, I think the overhead would solve it. I don't know how much, you know, what they can do, but yeah, people should drive it and see. Really hard to look into those voids behind the columns. Mm-hmm. And that's where the pedestrian pathways would be.
Okay. I want to bring your attention to the design criteria, the five design criteria that we've been using as our guide. It's always good to try to assess the options against these five criteria, because these are what we're using as our guiding principles. So just keep that in mind. I'm going to leave it on the screen. And as you come up with, you know, thoughts from last month on the Portland station, you can maybe refer to some of these. Go ahead, Rick. You're muted.
I was just adjusting a light.
I thought you had your hand raised.
I had it up, but it was moving something. Thanks.
I tend to agree with Don on the, and I don't want to be the only one speaking here, but we need some feedback that the pedestrian traffic crossing towards Emerald Queen Casino is really, we want to make it as safe as possible. And unless we see, you know, realistic diagrams of how that's going to happen under those overpasses at Portland or the other intersection, I'm not sure how we're going to, you know, make a determination. But the funding for the overhead is, it's not going to be cheap, but again, somebody brought up the issue that Northgate made it happen. And I don't know if that was a public-private partnership or how that occurred, but maybe this is one of those instances where it's necessary.
Yeah. Imad, now I do have my hand up. Yeah.
Go ahead.
This week I was in touch with WashDOT regarding the encampment that's going on under 705 at A Street. I don't know if you're all familiar with the growing. It's next to the Hope Furnishings down in that under the freeway. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the HOT team at Public Works in the city, and they've brought up many times that WashDOT is in, there's conflicting jurisdictional control when there's an area that is under a freeway, but it's owned by somebody else, just like what's going to happen at Portland Avenue crossing. And so it makes it doubly challenging for that, calling it pedestrian use. All of a sudden it becomes a perfect place where it's dry and it's able to be used for living. But WashDOT doesn't have they don't move people out of homeless encampments. And so that's what could happen under that enlarged area. Right now, it's so narrow that it isn't used. But once they enlarge it to make it, quote unquote, pedestrian friendly and usable, it will be big enough to be an encampment. And I haven't gotten anything back from WashDOT as to why that would be different from the situation under 705. So just a heads up. And so I would also throw in my belief that we could push for WashDOT to help out with something to be a pedestrian bicycle overpass, not going down into a tunnel under the freeway.
I also had a comment that I'd like to share with. We had a discussion. They were regarding the need base that we talked about, trying to get an analysis on the users. Mm-hmm.
Your phone. You're muted.
Janice, you still there?
I think she's muted.
Lost her. Something happened by accident?
She has her mute on.
Oh, sorry. I thought I turned it off. Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I brought up the last time when we were having this discussion in trying to get some projections for the Portland station use and also the Tacoma Dome station use to help maybe answer some of these questions we have about need base and demand. And I know when comparing it to Northgate, they have a tremendous amount of residential around that station that already exists. And also the mall that was there is providing a basis for pedestrian use.
Right.
So I was just trying to get an answer, if we could, on the where the traffic is going to be coming from, where the users are coming from. Help us really drill down on some of these needs.
Were we getting projections from Pierce Transit, WashDOT, Sound Transit, all of the above? And Brian and Lee Wong, maybe you can help out on this.
I'll mention a couple of things. I know this conversation about the Portland Avenue station will probably continue for the next couple of meetings. And so I think Don's suggestion is probably a really good one for folks. If you haven't been down to that area, to go down there and walk around and drive around. I know at the last meeting, one of the things that was mentioned was that there is an expanded sidewalk that's behind the pillars at Bay Street, which is, I don't think, quite as wide as what is proposed along Portland Avenue, but nonetheless gives a bit of a similar concept to what the pedestrian walkway behind the pillars might kind of look like or operate like. And that certainly is a good thing for folks to go down and see and experience, because I do think at the end of the day, one of the really significant recommendations probably coming out of this group, I get the sense, will be that pedestrian connection is super critical and needs to be designed in as good a way as possible to discourage encampments, as Rick, I think, brought up, and encourage pedestrian activity in the way that it's designed to do. And then even if the desire is beyond that, to really push hard for an overcrossing. But as far as the Sound Transit information, I think most of that would be coming from Sound Transit as far as the users, projected users of the station, and what their access points or their methods for access would be. So we'll certainly confer with them. I think, like I said, over the next couple of meetings, as we continue to debrief and talk about what the group's recommendation might be regarding the Portland Avenue station, we'll be sure to have that information.
Okay. Wanted to share the screen again. Can you guys all see the aerial? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
It's just good to have this handy as we have our discussion. So I'm going to bring the little little person down here to Portland, take a look at what we're talking about. Is this it? Oh, it's at the other intersection that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, you'd have to go forward about two blocks.
Yep, let me do that. It's right here? No. Bay Street?
Bay Street.
It's this one, correct?
No, Bay Street, the undercrossing, you have to go down a little farther south to where I-5 is. It's here. Where it goes under I-5.
Yeah. Yes, sorry. All right. Let's take a look right here, looking back towards the overpass. Yes.
So this would be the Portland Avenue undercrossing.
Right.
Where it's getting extended behind those pillars.
This is going to get widened.
Behind the pillars.
Right. Yeah. This is going to get widened, correct? Right here?
Yes.
And same on the other side?
Yes.
Okay. So that's what that one looks like. Let's go back to the other one. Over here, I think this is the problem. This is where the encampment is, I believe, right?
No, I think Rick was referring to an encampment over in the Dome District by A Street, underneath the I-705.
705.
Yeah, went too high. I need to be right here.
Hopefully with this new 4%, that'll encourage a lot more development of affordable housing.
Right.
So there right you can see a walkway behind the pillars, right?
Right. And is this going to get widened or not?
I don't believe that gets widened under the proposals, no. The other one is wider than that. It's 12 to 16 feet wide, so substantially wider, but
this was just done.
Right. Yeah. And we're gonna do the same thing and widen this edge too?
No.
No. Just at Portland.
But anyways, it gives you a little bit of a feel for what a walkway behind the pillars kind of feels like, even though, like I said, even though it's not as wide as what will be over at Portland Avenue, and that undercrossing is narrower generally. But
right, sure needs to be well lit and safe.
Just one point of clarification: widening the ped environment under Bay Street is one of the potential bike pedestrian access projects on Sound Transit list, so that is going through the evaluation process.
Widening at Bay Street, okay.
I really like the treatment they did in the Chinatown ID, if you all know those pillars that go up. I think it's around 7th or so. It's really beautiful what they've done.
You painted them.
That's a good comment.
Yeah, this is Lee Huang. Just want to acknowledge that we have representatives from Pierce Transit and Sound Transit. So if you need a feedback from them.
So is Sue, are you available? Are you on?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, I am on. So,
hi. Can you speak to getting those projections?
Yes, and you know, it looks like I was just looking at my email and realizing I hadn't sent over to Wong, which I had meant to do earlier this month, send him the, the ridership at each station. We do have that information that we developed in phase one, which was our alternatives analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were developing all the alternatives and we did the led to the preferred alternatives decision in July 2019. Anyway, we have some numbers that were developed that look at the number of riders on each of the stations, getting on, getting off. And so I can certainly provide that. You know, honestly, detailed information about where people are going to and from, I don't know that we have that. I mean, it's a model that develops these projections that you know, as a model of all the trips. I mean, every trip on every mode, including all the driving trips in the whole region. But, you know, it's really not at the level that you're probably talking to, which I understand the interest in having that level of detail, but I'm not sure that we have that available. But I will, anyway, at least get those basic numbers of how many people will be riding the link in 2042 based on our projection. So that I can, you know, like I said, the ones that we developed previously, get that to you. The expansion under the Portland Avenue will be both sides, as you just discussed. It'll be 16 feet on each side in terms of the actual width of the sidewalk, you know, which can be more than a sidewalk, obviously, with 16 feet, you can fit bugs and so on in there. So, yes, and it's behind, just like we discussed. So, those, and the one other thing I wanted to say is during this phase of work, we're going to be developing some concepts, which I think was you, Chair Bava, that mentioned, if you know, or maybe one of the others, that the desire to see, well, what could that really look like? And so these won't be final design decisions, but they will be done by an urban designer who is one of our consultants, and they will, you know, kind of imagine what that could look like. And I mean, a good example, yeah, I agree that those pillars at Chinatown, which is under the freeway, are, you know, a beautiful sort of piece that can be done. So we will have that available, and I think that likely would be at the time of the draft EIS.
And what's the date on that approximately, Sue?
Oh, we're looking at early 2022.
Okay. So you're saying we won't have any concepts until then?
For the specific design work of what these might look like. I mean, that's my projection right now. I suppose it could change, but that's...
okay.
We haven't even started. We literally just told the consultant to give them a change order to move forward on that work. So,
okay. Well, let's continue. Are there, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think there's, we put in a, and Rick was involved, quite a nice mural in the Amtrak station. And I would think that with the Puyallup tribe, there might be an opportunity, not only decorating the columns a la Chinatown in Seattle, but for them to be involved with this, because I think there's a lot of people are going to be coming from the station to the casino and the hotel. Mm-hmm. And to try to get them involved as a partner, I think would be just tremendous. So,
good point. I agree. I see that as a really nice gateway as you head towards that side of the freeway to the Emerald Queen. And again, whether it's an overpass or it works, or whether it works underneath, that's yet to be determined, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Any other comments before we move on? So what we need to accomplish, I think, not only the Puyallup Avenue design project, which has taken a priority, but we also want to make a recommendation for this Portland Avenue station. I think we do need to see maybe some projections if that helps us make decisions. And I don't know, it doesn't appear that we have any distinct direction yet. Correct me if I'm wrong. Are there any leanings towards one option or the other at this point. Any opinions on that?
I think in terms of economic development, we did feel that the one that the spanning one, I believe, provided more economic potential vacant or land that could be developed towards the casino than the other option, which was physically closer to the casino and took out the soccer field, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Let me share again. I'll just go to the map view. Well, that didn't work. There we go. Where did it go?
There's a soccer center there.
Yep. So this is approximately, this is the site of the original station or the main proposal. And the span, if correct me if I'm wrong, Sue, I believe goes about right here over Portland. It's in this triangular area right here, mm-hmm. I think. So by having it spanning Portland Avenue, it leaves all of this open for redevelopment.
Right.
Unless I'm wrong, my sense has been that we're not necessarily trying to come to conclusion on this today. Like I say, we probably have a couple of meetings to continue to go through this. I think what makes sense, and I think it was really good in the packet that we included the design principles that were put together when the group was looking at the Tacoma Dome station, and probably for everybody to start thinking about, and maybe at one of the next meetings, we might actually go through and do that similar sort of evaluation with the bubbles and everything. As a mechanism to work through that station option or the two station options for Portland Avenue against those five design principles, but mm-hmm. certainly an opportunity for folks to start thinking about that between now and when we have that more in-depth conversation, as well as clearly the access concerns to areas south of I-5 that I think no doubt will be highlighted in whatever recommendation the group probably makes.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, Brian. I think I'd like to recommend that you or Lee Wong send a blank one of these diagrams so that people can start doing that on their own for the two Portland Ave station options, and then have them ready or send them back to us so we could do a tally, just like we did for the first one. So Lee Wong, maybe you could please get that out before our next meeting, sooner than later, so that we can get everyone to think about it in a detailed manner. Please.
We will.
We'll do.
Okay, let's, I think that's all, unless there's any other comments or questions or issues to raise for this item, let's move on to the next one.
Very quickly, is it possible to also send a overview of the two options? It's been about a year since I've seen what those look like, and so I can't quite recall the details. That would be very helpful to me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That'd be great. And if we could have those as one, our slides, at least the main site plan of each one for our next meeting, whenever we discuss this, that would be also helpful. Okay, Tina, are you ready to talk about BRT?
I am, and I will share my screen and...
I'll stop share first, sorry.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. All right, so I think you see it now. So what I have is a slideshow, and Pierce Transit had a virtual open house for our BRT project back on December 10th, so just a week and a half ago. And these are some of the slides from that, and I wanted to just give you an update and show you where we're at. There's a couple graphics towards the end of this that are examples of what stations might look like in a median or at the right in the right of way for a bat lane or for a bus and general purpose traffic, and give you some of the highlights from that open house. And it was very well received, so I will share that with you. We had about 90 people in total logged on. So some of this will be what you've heard before, but we often have new people on the call. So I will give you just a quick update on Route 1 BRT and what is BRT. And one of the things I always like to stress are there are certain elements that when we are designing a BRT or across the nation or even around the world, when there are BRT systems, there's some certain standards that you see common in all BRT systems. And some of those are the frequency of the service. So the BRT systems run about every 10 to 15 minutes, so very high level of service, so very easy for riders to use. They're accessible, and for us, that means a number of different things. One of them is that the buses are very accessible, and how they interact with the station is also makes it easier for accessibility. These will be larger 60-foot articulated buses. These will be new in Pierce Transit's fleet. We don't operate articulated buses in local service yet, and so we're excited to bring this higher caliber of vehicle for this service as well, but also much easier to use, not only for someone boarding in a wheelchair, because the stations are elevated. They're about 9 inches higher off the ground, so when that bus stops near a station, it's near level boarding. There is a ramp if it's needed that comes out, but often if someone has a bicycle, they roll that into the vehicle, which is new. Today, the bus, a person on a bike would go to the front of the bus and put their bike on a bike rack on the outside. With BRT, you take that and you take it inside the bus with you. Same thing with a stroller. It's very easy just to roll in. The buses have 3 doors on each side, and all 3 doors open when it comes up to that station. And the stops, or the stations now, tend to be at very high boarding locations where there are connections to other services. And I'll show you a map of that in just a second. We also talk about the service being fast. And when we say fast, we don't mean that it's speeding. It can only go the speed limit, just like any other vehicle. But it's faster because we have these incremental improvements in the way we operate the service, like those 3 doors. So when the bus pulls up to the station, people board from at all three doors. They pay before they board, so there's off-fare payment. There'll be ticket vending machines, Orca readers on the station, just like light rail. And that's really what we're trying to do, is emulate light rail with a rubber tire service and operate bus rapid transit like light rail would operate. And very reliable for passengers because of that frequency. It's easy. You don't really need a schedule because you know that bus is going to arrive within 10 to 15 minutes. But then at each station, there's also information on real-time boarding so that you would know if your bus is going to be there in 5 minutes or 8 minutes. So we also like to share that these types of services really do improve the community and transit and the opportunity for someone to reach those destinations. What we've learned as we've talked to other systems, either in Vancouver, Washington, or up in Snohomish County, C-Tran in Everett, and even down in Eugene in Oregon, is when these systems have come in, there's really been economic support and generation along the corridor with new businesses or houses being developed, just like you see in light rail. It's harder, though, to find some of the studies. You can find that with light rail, but we're starting to be able to find more studies that talk about the economic generation or the value that these types of systems bring to communities as well. They also support City of Tacoma and Pierce County's long-range plans as far as where growth is planned and where density is planned and how people can get around. And also, there are 12 opportunity zones in Pierce County. 6 of those are along this corridor, and those opportunity zones are designated to try to incentivize development in lower income communities or disadvantaged areas. So this type of service really does help all riders who are trying to ride. Just briefly, the funding mix, this is a $170 million investment in the community. And of that, about $95 million is secured. These are grants and some local funding that we're partnering. The biggest share, of course, is a $60 million contribution from Sound Transit. And I'll talk about that when I show you the map of the corridor again. But Sound Transit's making a significant investment. And part of that is this service will be bringing riders to the Tacoma Dome station and connecting with Sounder Regional Rail, Regional Express Bus, and then in the future, light rail that's going to be going all the way to Seattle and then the airport. So it's a key connection for that regional access. And $75 million will be a request. We'll be asking of the Federal Transit Administration to help us fully fund the project. We're optimistic. We can apply for this grant when we reach 60% design, and our goal is to be at 60% design in the first quarter of next year. We've already been ranked. We've submitted already for this program called CIG, Capital Investment Grant, and we've been ranked medium high, which is a really good ranking, and it bodes well for our project. And we already meet monthly with our partners at FTA, and they are helping us as we move forward with the project. So this is a new map, and we're still trying to decide if this really helps us communicate the project. I'm hearing mixed results, but we're testing this, and I'm testing it with you as well. But this is our corridor. And so Route 1, 14.4 miles from in the south and Spanaway at about 208 to downtown Tacoma. The southern end, we are building the Spanaway Transit Center, which will be a new transit center turnaround for the BRT. It's a separate project, but it will be our anchor. And then we'll be traveling north along Pacific Avenue. In this corridor, you see a lot of things on this map. The little white dots are the stations. There today are about 64 pairs of bus stops in this 14-mile stretch. We will have 30 pairs of stations along the corridor. Each one is what we call a significant station, and I'm going to show you some graphics on those and the amenities that are included at each of those stations. They tend to be, at the most, about a half a mile apart, which is a little further than most of our bus stops are today. That tends to be where someone's willing to walk. And as we look at where people are coming from, it generally tends to be about a quarter of a mile is the furthest someone should have to walk to get to one of the stations. And also similar to light rail, and that's about an 8-minute walk or so for folks. The big change, though, and this is one that is important to you, is that the Route 1 today does not go to the Tacoma Dome station, but the BRT corridor will, and it's that key connection. And you can see that here at East 26th Street. This is how we're traveling to the Tacoma Dome station. And with that, we open up this access to a lot of other local services, businesses along the corridor, people who will be living along the corridor have their access to this bus rapid transit, but also Greyhound, Amtrak, so this true multimodal connection. And then the route travels into downtown Tacoma up on Market Street. And that was a change that we made in coordination with the city, where they asked us not to be down on Pacific, but to move up to Market so that we would have these two high-capacity transit corridors in downtown. And we know there's a lot of growth planned along Market and the Brewery District, and we're identifying the stations that would help support those that growth that is happening. The green lines that you see that are traveling up and down north and or east and west along this map are local routes. And even this Route 4, this green line that's here, that's another future BRT corridor. So very strong connections, and it really expands the reach of where someone can travel. And in the future, we will have up to 5 BRT corridors in Pierce County, and this will be one of those. And you can see how that network starts to come together. So also want to talk about some of the safety improvements that come with the project. We have a couple different types of lane treatments, and with that, part of the BRT corridor will have median lane treatments, where the bus is traveling in a median lane in the middle and the stations are in the middle, or in some areas it may be in the right lane or in a BAT lane, a business access transit lane, where a car can get in that lane and make a right turn into a business or a side street with the bus. But there's some improvements that will really help safety, people trying to cross the street, pedestrians in the corridor. And we're trying to call those out on this map. You can see one of the improvements are some roundabouts. There are three roundabouts already called out. These right that we're showing on the map are in Pierce County, 121st, 138th, and I believe it's 143rd or 146th. We're also, though, talking with the city of Tacoma. There's a very strong possibility at least one or two additional roundabouts are going to be added to this map. One would be at 96th Street in Tacoma, and one would be at 56th Street. So we're still in this analysis phase with the city and DOT and trying to determine what's the best intersection to have at those locations and what's the safest. And transit is receiving a benefit with those roundabouts as well. So there's a real possibility we would have that. The other thing you see here are the shield where we're adding those median stations, and what those bring are an opportunity if someone's crossing Pacific Avenue, they now have a refuge area to wait either if they can't make it all the way across the street, they could wait there, or it's a location for a break as you're trying to cross Pacific Avenue. And then there are also additionally, we've added some newer approved crosswalks and signals, and we've highlighted those where we have the arrow and the person walking. So in addition to a transit benefit, we also can start showing that there's a real pedestrian benefit or multimodal access improvements for individuals along the corridor. The other thing that we've been working on and we want to share with the community and we let folks know about when we did this open house was branding, and we call it Bus Rapid Transit, but we haven't had a name for our system. And our Pierce Transit Board of Commissioners did adopt a name for our system. We're calling it STREAM, and we're working on the branding that will go with this name, and you'll start seeing that early next year. But just like you hear of the STRIDE for Sound Transit or SWIFT for Community Transit, STREAM is our branded name, and we'll be talking about, you know, riding the system and improving the flow of that commute and how you can move around. STREAM was really important for the community in that this is not our first, this is our first line, but this won't be our last line. And like I'd mentioned, our long range plan does show up to 5 BRT corridors. So they will be branded as STREAM. One of the other pieces that you often work on, though, is the line and naming the line. And sometimes it can be a letter, it could be a color, it could be a number. Another opportunity, though, is sponsorship. And that's something we're also exploring right now, is there an opportunity to sponsor either stations or the line name for our system? And an example of that is Cleveland, where they have two BRT systems. One runs through a hospital area and one runs through university area. And they're called the Health Line and the University Line. And both the health system or the university system is sponsoring those lines. So we're exploring, are there opportunities like that out there? And as we learn more, we'll keep letting you and the community know. So I'd mentioned stations, and I have two graphics I want to show you. I've been before you before, and I've shown you some concepts of what our station looks like. We started with three ideas or three concepts for our station. We've adopted this concept, which is called suspension. So this would be our system design, which will be all of our stations for all the corridors as we grow the system. And we wanted to start showing what this could look like when it's in the community. So we've got one. This is actually in Pierce County. It's Pacific Avenue and Military Road. And you see the station in front of 76 gas station. And it is in a BAT lane or a dedicated lane. There is a bike lane, and we maintain that bike lane. And you can see how the station fits near the sidewalk. You can see these might be folks who are coming to ride the STRIDE or the STREAM. They might be walking through. This person looks like he's definitely going to be catching our STREAM. But you can see the ticket vending machines, and those are at each of the stations. There are ORCA readers, kind of hard but to see, but there's one back here. Additional lighting, the covered canopy, and then that next bus technology that could be located in this location under the station. So you see some of these elements that are each station. And then we wanted to show you a station that is in Tacoma as well, but also what a median station might look like. And again, this is really conceptual, but this is at 38th and Pacific. So here's an area where highly likely we'll have median lanes. In this location, we actually have two lanes, and we're probably showing you the most challenging graphic to explain and to share, walking you through this, this bus is actually heading southbound. It's not going to stop at this station. What happened here is it stopped at the station that's on the other side of the intersection, a near side stop here, and it stopped here, it let people on and off, and then it came through the intersection, and now it's traveling into a bus lane, and it's heading south to PLU or to Spanaway. This lane that's closest to the station is where the northbound bus is going to come through. It'll stop, and then our riders who are waiting can board, and they can travel into downtown Tacoma. And again, you see the same type of elements or amenities that would be at all of our stations, the covered area, the signage, ticket vending machine, a seat, and then even starting to show where we have ADA amenities, those truncated domes, identifying where the doors would line up so it's easier for someone to know where to board. But this gives you a sense of what a median station might look like in Tacoma as we develop these. And then just really quickly, you can see here, we've continued to be very, open and wanting to do as much as we can to communicate the project. And to that end, we had our most recent open house. We also have our website. We've been sending mailers along the corridor. We've actually mailed three different packets, and I'll show you, or I'll give you some information on that. But we're trying to really engage properties and property owners or residents living around along the corridor who may be impacted. Our design is still evolving. So the conversations we're having is, this is what the design looks like now. We want to start having these conversations. If there are changes that we can make that help the design, help a property owner, now's the time that we can do that. And so we want to get to know the different property owners. We also have a mailing list that we keep up to date, and we keep adding more individuals to. As I mentioned, we've been sending these packets out, and we have this information on our website as well. But when we send one of these mailers, we're trying to describe the project, what the impact might be at a particular property, and then start to communicate how we will be working with property owners. And we're not at the point where we can talk to them about purchasing properties or those types of things, but we can at least make the connections and let them get to know us and have a face, a phone number available for them to call us. The good news is we've reached out, we've sent three separate mailers now to property owners. We are looking for an email address list so that we can start engaging businesses and property owners that have email that we can reach. And then we will be going door to door. It's kind of hard right now with COVID to make that step. When we do hear from someone though, we let them know, we can talk to them face to face. We've been doing in contact meetings with social distancing. We've been having virtual meetings, and then phone or email as well. The good news is we have reached about 150 individuals is what I've heard. So it's a good number, but we still have a lot more to go, and we will keep working to meet them. Lastly, our project timeline, as you know, we started working on this project with our feasibility study back in 2017. So we've been engaged for quite some time. As we near the end of 2020, we are in that phase between 30% and trying to get to 60%. We can't quite get to 60% design because we're also trying to wrap up our environmental, our NEPA, our National Environmental Policy Act work with the Federal Transit Administration. And then we'll conclude, we'll get to 60% design and start our SEPA, our state environmental requirements. After we get to that NEPA stage is also when we can be more serious about talking to property owners and have some more significant conversations with them. We believe we'll be at 90% design by October of 2021, and construction would actually start sometime early in 2022. So we still have time, but we're at a pretty critical point right now in the project where we're really trying to fine-tune the design and really move forward with a set design for the project. One other thing that I wanted to bring in, and this is a slide that's not in your packet, and it was something I just worked on. You had had questions about, you know, what is bus service along Puyallup Avenue, and how does that relate to the bus rapid transit corridor? So spent a little time today working on this map. This shows you all the routes that are in the Tacoma Dome Station area. The colored lines are the various routes. Some of those are Sound Transit. Most of them are Pierce Transit routes. And when we talk about bus service, I wanted to give you a sense of numbers of how many bus trips are operating down on Puyallup Avenue. Today, we have a total of 515 daily bus trips that are traveling down on Puyallup Avenue. That does not include Route 1 because it does not go to the Tacoma Dome Station. It stays over here on Pacific. And then in the future, in 2040, and that's kind of a planning window we look at, we're estimating about 577 bus trips, and those are a combination of Pierce Transit and Sound Transit, a slight increase. Most of those are actually Pierce Transit service increases. With Sound Transit, you're going to see a lot more link service in the area. I put on the map also which of the routes, because it feels like there's conversations about different parts of the corridor. So you can see the Pierce Transit routes that are to the west of the Tacoma Dome, and then the routes that are to the east of the Tacoma Dome Station, how some of the routes are coming from, like the 400s traveling from Puyallup and coming down to the Tacoma Dome Station, the 41s coming from that McKinley and the Salishan area, it's coming down Portland Avenue onto Puyallup, and then the 42 is on McKinley, and it doesn't travel straight to the Tacoma Dome. It actually just comes down Puyallup and goes into downtown Tacoma. What'll be new, and I didn't get the line on the map, but I tried to label it, is the future bus rapid transit corridor, the Route 1, will travel down Pacific Avenue. It'll turn on 26, and then it will travel to the Tacoma Dome Station. It'll come back that same way as well. And we're estimating it'll have about 158 trips a day going back and forth along that corridor just for the Route 1 BRT. And it's a pretty big number, but that's great for riders and for the community wanting to travel around. And that's because of the frequency in that area. Throughput is also something that we think about in transit, and it's very important. It's like, well, how many, I can give you bus numbers and tell you how many buses are out there, but how many people are on those buses is also very important. And when I looked at the bus services that are on Puyallup Avenue today, there's over 6,900 board people on those buses traveling on that route on any given weekday. So that's how many people are on board a bus benefiting from that bus service that's down in that corridor. So this is something new, but I thought it was important to share with you as well. And that is our update, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tina.
You're welcome.
We need to move forward as quickly as we can.
Okay.
We're running
so I'm gonna
just
stop
a bit
sharing.
Behind, but go ahead. Questions?
One quickie. Hi, Tina.
Hello.
Hi. On 26th, there will be a dedicated bus lane, I assume, or a bat lane, something like that, when you turn off the Pacific coming around. Is that true?
You know, I have seen in some of the drawings that it's a queue jump is really what it is. And it's a queue jump as the bus is coming from Pacific onto 26th. It's not a dedicated lane the entire length of East 26th, no.
Okay. Well, the reason I was asking is, if that is more bus oriented, is it possible to take some of the traffic up and share that lane with other buses that are currently some of the 500 that are traveling?
Our plan right now is not to do that. Part of that is some of these riders are also trying to get to the services and amenities on Puyallup because we have the stops along Puyallup as well. And also taking them out of their way to travel along Tacoma Dome. So our plan has been to keep them down on Puyallup Avenue.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Tina, I have a question.
Yeah.
So the as a tie-in to the Puyallup Avenue design project, it seems, I think the HOV lane is going to be eastbound only.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of your 515 routes, how many, I should say, will be traveling eastbound in that corridor versus using regular traffic lanes westbound. Any idea?
It's the majority of them, because that's why I was trying to put the bus numbers there. There's only one route, the 42, which is that one on McKinley, that mm-hmm. doesn't go to the east. All the other routes, as I'm looking here, travel the whole length of Puyallup Avenue.
The eastbound.
Well, right? East and west, yeah.
Okay. But yeah. So the point I'm trying to ask is, you'll be using the HOV lane eastbound mm-hmm. fairly often, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I mean, we have buses coming through probably every half an hour. And our goal would be to try to increase some of that frequency if possible. But at least every half an hour, most of these buses are coming through in an eastbound direction.
Okay. One more comment. The median station, that seems a little confusing to the vehicular drivers. If I was driving, so there's basically what is that, north and south?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, north and southbound lane for both. There's a one of each for the buses and one for the autos, right?
There's two for the autos, because we don't eliminate any of the general purpose lanes other than the turn lane. Mm-hmm. That center turn lane goes away that you're used to seeing in those locations.
Yeah.
So there's two general purpose in each direction. And in that particular location, there's also two transit lanes, one in each direction. There will be some type of curb or barrier that is still being designed. In that area, there'll likely be signage to help explain what is happening to cars that are driving out there so they understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for us, there'll be a whole communication plan where we are trying to educate the community on how the lanes are changing out there. And we've talked with other BRT systems that have gone through something similar where, you know, there's a real dedicated effort to trying to explain how traffic is changing out there.
Yeah, that seemed a little confusing to me and maybe a little dangerous for the common driver.
Well, I mean, these things are operating in many places in the country, and part of what we're doing is that safety work to make sure they're safe. I mean, you do have bus rapid transit systems all around the world, and mm-hmm. many of them do have those median type treatments. So, they're safe, and that's why we go through a lot of review to make sure that they're mm-hmm. safe.
Thank you.
Yep.
Janice.
Oh, you're muted. Mute.
There?
Good.
Yep. There you go.
Thanks. Sorry about that. One of the things I had to ask you is the dedicated lane, the HOV, is that what you're calling it? How is the freight, the existing freight going to, they use that turn lane. Will they be able to share that? There won't be a turn lane. So how
on Pacific Puyallup, Avenue?
Puyallup.
On Puyallup. So I can't answer the Puyallup question.
Mark will be able to answer that.
Yeah.
Once we get
that hasn't been decided. Is that correct? The exact use of Puyallup, how that's going to be, the traffic's going to be shared.
Mark's going to be showing that. That's the next hour of our meeting.
Okay.
I can comment on it really quick, though, Chair Baba. So, Janice, you're absolutely right. It has not been decided. It's still an open, it's an open question. And we'll probably have our traffic section work with community along somewhat of a parallel path with the project to really identify kind of the best use for that lane, how it should be managed, with feedback from the Transportation Commission, from your group, from freight users, et cetera. Is it going to be only peak use? Is it going to be open during the day to general traffic? But even if it is a BAT lane or an HOV lane, anybody making a right turn can use it.
And one other comment, as I talked to, I forget the gentleman at Pierce Transit on the stop at D Street, and we were having some issues with trash. So we were discussing that and the possibility of having that stop looked at because of the low ridership was brought up at that particular stop. And I think you're going under review with the route or with the stops.
So was that Nathan maybe?
That stop away?
Yes. So they were talking about because of the low ridership, because the transit is just right down a couple blocks away, of the need to have that stop right at that critical turn, you know, at D Street going to the mm-hmm. dome. So I was wondering if you could follow up with them because they were saying this was a critical time when they start reviewing the stop.
I'm guessing it might have been Nathan that was.
Talking to Nathan, but it was somebody else who was working with that group.
I'll have to ask. So I think I know what you're talking about. There is a group that is reviewing all the bus stops,
yeah.
And they're doing an analysis of proximity of the number of stops to each other, their location, are they ADA accessible, and looking at holistically all the stops in the system. And right. They are making some recommendations on some changes. I don't know the specifics on particular stops because I haven't been in that group. I just know that they're working on that. And we've talked with them about as that work progresses, making sure they have a communication plan and sharing that information before any changes are made. So that's the next piece that they're working on. But I will reach out to Nathan's group and then our bus stop program to see if I can figure out who is working on that with you. And then I'll try to get back to you, Janice,
That'd
and find out what I can, what they've done. I did hear a please don't get rid of that stop also, though, as the conversation was happening. So
he had the numbers.
Some more feedback on that.
Okay.
We had that stop closed temporarily when the 42 was on detour and going down to the dome. And because the bus stop is the only place where people can go, especially with agency vouchers, to get their bus pass renewed every month, and a lot of people that use that are ADA category, it was a real hardship on a lot of people in our community. Maybe the numbers aren't huge, but for the people who are having challenges, the challenges were very significant. It's really difficult when you're in a wheelchair or walker or other ADA elderly people to have to go up that hill is hard. And it also helps me to go to Celebrity Cake Studios. So I really like it for that too.
It's the stop, you know, right across next to Alfred's. That's the one I'm referring to.
The one right on the corner.
Yeah. I think you're talking about the same stop.
Would you get back to us, please?
I will get back to you. I'll get back to the committee.
All right. We need to move on. Thank you, Janice.
Yep.
All right. Mark, I think you're up with the Puyallup Avenue design project. Sorry, yes, that's it.
Okay, I'm going to try and share my screen here and see if I can do that. Am I up? Is it going?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Chair Baba. Thank you, members of TODAG, for this opportunity to come back to you yet again to talk about this with more detail. I have about 15 or 20 slides. Some of them I'm going to go kind of quickly through because it's kind of history a little bit. Provide some background to folks that were not involved in our 2016, 2017, 2018 work when we did quite a bit of outreach and we put our initial alternatives together. So there's some background there. I'm also going to go into the alternative development a little bit, the concept review that we started earlier this summer that really started up all this conversation. And basically what we heard the last one or two times we came, as well as through emails and calls, was that people are very concerned about parking. So we did a very quick parking analysis. And it's very limited. It's based on the information we have on hand. We have no survey. You know, the streets could be off by or the right-of-way could be off by 5 feet in some areas, and you wouldn't get that row of parking at all. So please take everything in this presentation really with a grain of salt. It is very concept-based, and it's really the best information we have now. If we do pursue the grant and we move into our design phase, one of the first things we do will be go out and survey, and then that information will really start tying everything together, where the building fronts are, where the curbs are, what is the width of the right-of-way in that area, et cetera, et cetera. So really take this information with a grain of salt. Know that we're going to work with you as best we can during this process to really try and meet everybody's needs. But again, this is just kind of our quick shot showing opportunity really at this point. And I want a couple more key concepts or goals here. This whole process started, let me see here. Okay. Sorry, I'm having a, there you go. Before I jump into this current schedule, I just want to talk about why we're here. And over these last 2 or 3 months, as I said, we received a lot of very intense feedback from the community on some things that were very important to them. So in early December, we had all this information just floating around in the air, and we really needed a recommendation from TODAG on a couple things. So we sent a letter to TODAG. That's how this presentation got developed. And we asked basically 3 things from them or from your group. Should we really build a project as it's written in the grant application, which includes reconfigured on-street parking for loading, rideshare zones, and so on, which may, when I say reconfigured, it may be on the side streets. We also heard quite a bit of feedback on removal of the HOV lane between East C and East G streets, basically in the core of the district. So that's one of the questions, you know, do you want that HOV lane running through where the buses are slowing down and turning at the transit center, picking up people and so on? I think there is benefit to have it run the whole way. Or should we just, since these things are still kind of up in the air, they're in our grant, and that is very hard to change in our grant. There was also some talk about returning the grant to the funding agency and reapplying at a later date. So really, those were the 3 things that we really wanted TODAG to take a hard look at and come to some conclusion, make some recommendation on how you would like us to proceed. Again, this recommendation goes to the Transportation Commission, which would also get a recommendation from BTAG, which would all go come to Public Works as well as the IPS committee. The council would have a role in understanding all the ins and outs of what's happening and all the feedback from the various groups and the communities. So that's how we're here now. And I just want to talk about one more kind of key concept in that there are certain, even though you're going to be looking at a lot of conceptual pictures, but there are some things that are somewhat fixed in our grant. One is the HOV lane, it's eastbound and it runs the full length of the corridor. The other is kind of the lane configurations that we included in our grant, which is based on our hybrid alternative, which is a combination of 2 alternatives that we presented to the public. Can these things be changed? Yes, they can be changed, but they're very difficult to be changed, or there's added steps which could affect funding, which could affect schedules, could affect a lot of different things. So when you're looking at the concepts and you're making your recommendations, just keep these kind of fixed things in your head as you move forward. So on this slide, I talked about the first bullet already, getting that recommendation. And that recommendation, we'd really like it by the January 20th meeting of the Transportation Commission, if that is possible with your group. We talked about the Transportation Commission getting recommendations from TODAG and BTAG and making their own recommendations. I would strongly recommend that you look at the prior Transportation Commission recommendations that are in the back of our third design memo, or our third tech memo. It's in one of the appendices in the back. It's about a 4-page letter. When I went to the commission last week, they said they were going to review that letter as well. So when you're making your recommendations, please take a look at what their recommendations are as well and see if that's worth factoring in or not, or how you want to do that. As I did indicate, we did get some feedback on the HOV lane. between East C and East G Streets, pulling it out. We've already started that conversation with PSRC because it's a lengthy conversation, at least 2 to 3 months. That's what we're expecting. There may be some grant impacts as far as affecting what design funding we have. We have $2.1 million that could be reduced. It could also really affect the grant itself. They may feel, well, if you're going to take out the HOV lane, you scored a lot of points on that. This project barely scored to get funding. So if you're going to pull that out, what does that do with the scoring? So all that's being looked at, and we're moving on a parallel path with the recommendations from BTAG and TOTAG and going to IPS. And as I said, we're hoping to go to IPS in March to present everybody's recommendations, all the concepts and so on. And then if we decide to move forward with the grant itself, we would move into the obligation phase of this pre-design. That would be April to May, excuse me. And then design would start in the June, July period, depending on schedule from the Department of Transportation. I expect it to be at least a 2-year design because of right away, because of environmental impacts, historical buildings, things like that. I think it will take a little while. So it's about a 2-year period. And once we get to that point, I did get some questions about, you know, when would the check-in be with TOTAG and Transportation Commission and BTAG, et cetera. We would have them along the way. I'm not going to, you know, lay that out in a schedule now, because we have to get through kind of this first phase. Are we moving forward? And if we're moving forward, what are we moving forward with? So I hope that's a lot of information to think about, but I just wanted to kind of set the stage for this presentation. So the project itself, for those of you that don't know, it's we received a grant, I think it was back in 2018, to reconstruct Puyallup Avenue from South C Street, which is on the other side of Pacific Avenue, the west side of Pacific Avenue, all the way to Portland Avenue, including the Portland intersection. The grant included rebuilding the entire roadway, putting fiber in the roadway, all new signals, reconnecting or interconnecting all those signals so they can be better managed. Bicycle facilities, landscaping, crosswalks, better crosswalk timing for pedestrians as they cross, bulb outs, shortening those crossing distances, pedestrian lighting that runs along the whole corridor. And the way it's set up now in the grant, it's generally one lane westbound, except in the kind of the TOD area. Maybe it's really half the neighborhood district into the TOD. It's one lane westbound, a center turn lane, two lanes eastbound, and one of those eastbound lanes is, you know, the curb lane is the HOV transit lane. The bike facilities that are shown in the grant are two bike lanes, one on each side of the road. The concept I'm going to show you coming up, because we were looking to save space in the roadway, is a cycle track on the north side of the road, which actually got very good feedback from the public during our open house and our online surveys. The segment itself is broken up, or the roadway itself, the length of it is broken up into three segments. What's called the neighborhood district basically runs from South C Street to D Street, the TOD district from D Street to G Street, and then from G Street to Portland Avenue is the industrial district. And that's where the zoning actually changes to a light industrial across the corridor. Our goals back in 2016, 2017, was to really support multimodal uses and create a complete street. It's a very wide right of way. There's a lot of opportunity here for all modes of travel. Make that experience great for everybody, cyclists, drivers, transit riders, freight operators, pedestrians, et cetera, and make Puyallup Avenue an inviting place, which gets into that placemaking that Rick was talking about earlier. I think that's really important. The outreach, it was quite extensive. We began in October. We had stakeholder groups. We had in-person surveys, you know, surveys on the streets, surveys at farmers market. We did online mapping, an online mapping tool, and the outcome of that is up in the top right. It's, you know, where do you have ideas on Puyallup Avenue? Where do you see barriers on Puyallup Avenue? We gathered all this information. We had a stakeholder charrette. We had a public design charrette. All that rolled into a public open house. And then even after the open house, we collected additional online feedback on the alternatives for about month and a half or 6 weeks afterwards. So there was a lot of activity during this process. What we heard, you know, we need more safe places to cross the street, more trees and landscaping. It has a very urban, dense feel, very open down there as well in some areas, sidewalks in better condition, safer access to transit stops, bicycle facilities, safe and comfortable for all family members came up quite a bit on Puyallup Avenue. More off-street parking. We heard a lot about not using the right-of-way for parking. Artwork, quieter street, slower vehicle speeds, et cetera. Other came at number three, and that's just kind of a compilation of a bunch of different kind of random thoughts, you know, everything from improved storefronts to better road maintenance, potholes, et cetera, to maybe adding gateway features, noise reduction from all the train and construction noise, more mixed retail use. So there's a lot of things happening. People had a lot of good ideas on what to see on Puyallup Avenue. Some of the stakeholder feedback we had, you know, we spent a lot of time working on the sub area plan. Let's make the stuff that's in there happen. We need better access to the Tacoma Dome station. Parking is an issue, and it's still an issue now. And it's going to be an issue in the future. Make it safer for everybody. You know, we, as part of our outreach, we actually walked on Puyallup Avenue. And it can be, you know, somewhat frightening in some areas. There's a lot of fast-moving traffic. We found that from really Pacific Avenue to the D Street, G Street area, people are generally doing the speed limit. Once you get beyond that, people are picking up speed. And it becomes much more of an industrial space. And what we have in this project will really help soften that and make it feel more like a corridor, kind of an entry gateway to the city. And again, make it feel like a place. So once we did all that, we gathered all this feedback, we developed three alternatives. Alternative one, it's the top left alternative. It's basically two lanes eastbound. One is an HOV transit lane, a center turn lane, and one lane westbound. It's got parking on both sides, and it has a parking protected kind of cycle track on the north side, and sidewalks and amenity zones on both sides. And I guess I would say we had cross sections for the entire corridor, but these are just cross sections, just focusing primarily in the TOD area, East D Street, kind of East E Street. Alternative two, which is the top right, it's basically two lanes in each direction. There is no HOV transit lane. It has parking on the north side. It has more of a buffered bike lane on the east side, a little parking protected bike lane on the north side. And then alternative three, which is quite a bit different than the other two, has one lane in each direction with a center turn lane. And it has just buffered bike lanes on each side. People really liked this as far as pedestrian comments. They felt they were very well separated from traffic. They felt very protected, but from a traffic perspective, it really didn't turn out very well. So those are three alternatives, and we took them to our open house. And we had a lot of feedback in the open house, and some people said, you know, I really like this about this alternative, and I like that about that alternative. And we said, okay, tell us what you like about East, and we'll see if we can put together kind of a hybrid alternative that kind of meets everybody's needs. And as I indicated, some of the things that people like, they like the protected bike lanes of alternative two, the reduced on-street parking or better parking management of alternative two as well, because alternative two didn't have parking on both sides. Alternative three, that was that separated area. It provided a lot of space and safety for pedestrians. And a lot of people liked the HOV lane in alternative one on the eastbound side. Some of the concerns we heard, you know, vehicle speed with two general purpose lanes in each direction. That's essentially what's out there now with the center turn lane. And there is the feeling that people are driving fast. And in some areas, they certainly are. they were a little concerned with like alternative three, where we're starting to reduce lanes and, you know, what kind of backups would that cause? And especially once you get into the transit center area, there's a lot of turns happening, and there would definitely be backups there. Who's going to maintain all this new green space? And there was a lot of concern for a really well-protected, ped bike-friendly environment. So with those items, we developed kind of an alternative four. And this is what it is, from East C Street to East G Street. or actually, that heading is incorrect. That's what I did here is I put the alternatives across the entire corridor for alternative four. I tried to squeeze them in. So from Pacific to A Street, there's a lot of turning happening. As you can see, there's a right turn lane in this area, you know, and you have the buffered bike lane in the middle. You do have your HOV lane, two lanes eastbound, one westbound here with a center turn lane. As we move into the core of the district, now we're adding a second westbound lane because the traffic volumes go up quite a bit here. In fact, the transit center really provides, when we did this study anyway, about a third of the traffic on this corridor. So we added a second westbound lane. Again, we have the bike lanes on both sides and a center turn lane and two eastbound. So this alternative is very similar to alternative two with two lanes in each direction, except we still have that center turn lane because of all the turning movements in the TDS area. And then once you get into the industrial section, it drops back to something similar, where we have two lanes eastbound, one westbound, and a center turn lane. We have parking on both sides, and we have bike lanes again. They're buffered pretty much in most cases along this corridor. But I think it's trying to meet the best of all worlds, if that's possible. It also serves the traffic well. There are trade-offs that go along with this type of alternative because in the very dense movement areas of the corridor, we added more lanes to accommodate that. So then earlier this summer, what we did is, because we heard basically at that convention center meeting back in 2018, as well as the recent calls and emails that we received, that parking was important. So if you remember, there is no on-street parking in the East D Street to East E Street area and in alternative four. So we said, okay, what can we do to get parking in? We moved some things around. We took out the bike lane on the south side and put a cycle track kind of on the north side. And this is a little different than the one I showed you at that first meeting, in that we went in and highlighted in blue where parking would be with this concept. And remember, these are just concepts. We don't know how wide the right of way is. It's just our best guess at this time. So the pink is the HOV lane. You know, here's C Street, here's D Street. So you can kind of see what's happening through the core of the district. Putting parking on the north side, you can see where the parking is going and how it continues all the way through the district. There is no parking here because this is where the bridge is. It gets a little tight. And you'll see in some of the later slides that once you get to Pacific Avenue, we're kind of losing parking up in this area a little bit, up in this area here and in this area here. Right now, everybody's parking on the bridge, and it's actually an RCW. You're not supposed to park on the bridge. So we have to get that out and signed. So again, this is just a concept, but I wanted to give you a layout of kind of how it looks now from, you know, without having anything really measured. So what does this mean for a cross-section? Okay, so we have parking on the north side. We have 8 feet of kind of a cycle track here with a 3-foot buffer. We have sidewalk and amenity zone. Sidewalk and amenity zone is about 13 feet. Here's your HOV transit lane eastbound, a general purpose lane, turn lane, and two general purpose lanes westbound. Again, this is just in this east C to east F Street area. And, you know, while we're looking at this, we're thinking about different alternatives. And we said, hey, what would it take to get parking on both sides, right? So we took a shot at that. Now, keep in mind, what happens is you're going to lose the space in the sidewalks. You know, I don't know how wide this right-of-way is. We're thinking it could be 95 feet in this area. It could be 100 feet in this area. If it's 100 feet, that's great. You're going to get 2.5 feet back on each side, but you're looking at 9 to 12 foot sidewalks if you want parking on both sides. You know, if that's something we want to carry through. You know, you're going to have landscaping measures. You're going to have the pedestrian scale lighting up and down the corridor. You know, it's going to feel like kind of a busy place in this area because there's a lot going on. You have active storefronts compared to a lot of the remaining corridor. So the lanes are a little small, and I want to be very clear that this is just a concept right now. We're going to collect feedback from everybody, and our freight partners and our transit partners are going to say, okay, this is an 11-foot HOV transit lane. Okay, that might be okay, but you know, for freight westbound, you know, maybe we need a wider lane over here. And from BTAG, we might get some feedback that says, okay, 8 feet. 8 feet is the minimum we can have. You know, maybe it should be 9 feet here because we're so close to, we have a parking lane here. So actually, that's pretty good. But all I'm saying is that we're going to get feedback from everybody. So what I'm looking for, what Public Works is looking for, is your recommendations for this corridor. You know, is parking on both sides a priority for you? Is parking on one side a priority for you in this area? Because as you saw from that earlier slide, once you get out of this area, there's parking on both sides. Okay, so to help you think this through, we did a really quick parking analysis. I'm hoping you can see this. And so this is from East C to East E Street, and this is the existing parking. So here's East C, here's East D, Puyallup Avenue's in the middle. And this shows kind of the first number is what's perceived parking, and the number in the parentheses is actually legal parking. Because if you look at all these red lines, you know, there's no parking 25 feet from a crosswalk, there's no parking 5 feet from a driveway. We can only mark and stripe those areas that are legal. So when we're done, those are the spots that we're going to count. So what this says is there's 11 stalls on the north side in this area, East C to East E Street. 11 on the north side, and there's 10 on the south side. So right now we're talking about 21 existing stalls out there. Okay, in the concept that we showed, we just kind of drop things down on a 2015 aerial photo. So we're already 5 years behind what's actually out there, although we did update the East C Street corner. What we did, so we took parking away from the south side. We took parking away from the south side on both of these blocks, but changing some of the bulb outs, we can get 13 stalls on the north side. So in this block on Puyallup Avenue, you're talking about a loss of about 8 stalls. And again, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's all very conceptual at this point. So, okay, we lost 8 stalls on Puyallup Avenue. Do we have any other options for on-street parking? Well, we do. If you go to East C Street and we go to East E Street, you know, this could be built out for more stalls because right now it's just parallel on both sides. It's wide open. And when I say stalls, I mean, you know, Uber drop-off stall, you know, Uber stalls, loading zones, you know, just drop-and-go type stalls. There's opportunity to use this right-of-way space to make it fit the project that's occurring right next to it. Make it support, help it support that project. So if you look at this layout, if this right-of-way is correct, there's 23 existing stalls out here now on both of these streets. 44 is proposed, so we're gaining 21 spaces. That's with the existing measurements on a 2015 aerial photo. Traffic still would need to do a thorough vetting of this, but these are some of the options that are out there. Now, I wanted to go back the first study we did, or the first assessment, was really in the core of the district. But then looking at the concept layout, you know, from A Street to C Street, we saw we were losing parking there. I didn't want any surprises later, so I wanted to bring this up now. This one's a little different. Everything's shown on one sheet, and what's bubbled in orange is a parking that just doesn't fit anymore. And so what's happening is there's 19 existing stalls out here. We have to remove 14 of them so that there's only five stalls that remain the way they're set up now. And that's these stalls here, everything that's not bubbled orange, and these five up here. So is there any other opportunity in this area? We looked around. A Street is here. It's a very underutilized street. And there is the possibility to put in additional stalls on A Street. Again, traffic would have to vet this. We'd have to get a better aerial, et cetera, but there's eight out here now as measured, eight legal. We're proposing 16, so there's a gain of eight. Again, it's just an idea, but I just wanted to put these ideas out so they could be thought up by everybody. Wow, I made it through the whole presentation. So we also worked on, in these last couple days, there's a handout in your packet, design criteria by section. And I just put some of the higher level bullets in here. In segment one, the neighborhood district, you know, we always want to maximize parking. What can we do that? We want wide sidewalks. We want safe feeling sidewalks, you know, protected street edge. We want street trees. We want ped safety. We want additional lighting. All that's in the grant. We move into the next district, which is kind of the core, or the next segment, kind of the core district in this area. The same four bullets from segment one apply, but what we heard, and we always hear, even when this project isn't up and being discussed, you know, ease of crossing the street, you know, at D Street, et cetera. Let's get that signal timing down so pedestrians actually have a shorter crossing distance and the walk signs actually work the way they're supposed to work, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's other things happening in here, right? So what, with the other projects going on, are there any improvements that we can take advantage of or that we may want to connect to or at least talk about when we're placemaking or we're making space for unique places along Puyallup Avenue? Is there a connection that we want to make? And long-term, this is the recommendation for the HOV transit lane that we were talking about. That has not been defined. That's open in the grant. And we would want feedback from everybody on how that lane would be managed. The final district, or the final segment, the industrial district, this is really the gateway to Tacoma. This is what I remember. Half the people that come to the Tacoma Dome for a show come to Tacoma for the first time, so this is what they're seeing. We definitely want to maintain parking, but this section of the corridor has higher freight use. Is there other improvements you want to make in this part of the corridor to enhance that? We definitely need more sidewalks and signage over here, better sidewalks and signage. We need some landscaping. This is where it really felt like the vehicles were moving fast. And then the bicycle connections, let's think about those beyond Portland Avenue and how we're going to connect to them. I mean, there's trails in the future. Are we going to connect to that, 10-foot wide sidewalk on Portland Avenue? What's going to happen? How are we going to get there? And then some of the same things, street edge landscaping, protection, pedestrian safety, lighting, et cetera. That's my whole presentation. So I hope it was enough to help you make some recommendations, kind of understand the trade-offs of what's happening in the district across the corridor. You know, we wouldn't add lanes. You know, someone said, okay, how about if we take away one westbound lane in the core of the district? Well, we traffic modeled alternative one, and we traffic modeled alternative three, and they each have one westbound lane. That lane backed up from D Street to G Street. It's over 1,000 feet of traffic waiting at a light to go through during the peak period when people are turning in and out of the transit center. And that is why our traffic engineer said, no, we really need, because of all those turning movements, we need another lane in this area. So I'll stop talking right now and I'll try to answer whatever questions you have.
Mark, thank you. That was a great presentation. I'd like to bring up the point. If you can bring up that parking on both sides slide, please, at the very end. One of your last slides.
So it's not this one, parking on both sides?
That one right there. Can you zoom in a little, please? Control plus.
Oh, there you go. See?
Should do it.
Now I'm in an Apple, so it's not working.
Oh my. Okay.
I know. That's sorry. Hold on a minute. And you know what it is? This is PowerPoint on the web too, so I don't even have.
That's okay. I just want to bring up an important point to the group. First one is that I measured the GIS mapping that the city uses between the buildings, and it's really close. It's about 100 feet. I don't think it's going to be any less, but I know that the city planners use that all the time, and it's probably fairly accurate. It's not a survey, but it's going to be close to 100 feet is my thought. Therefore, this scenario is, I think, a likely one. And I wanted to point out the second thing is the landscape where the trees and street trees and lighting are located. Those are actually not a landscape, full landscape buffer, but they're street trees and grates, which allows you to actually walk on them. A lot of urban jurisdictions do this for their design guidelines. They put tree grates along the curb edge so that you can still use the rest of the sidewalk. And that's what, this is different than some of the previous concepts where you've shown a full, you know, 3 or 4 foot wide landscape strip. So this provides the flexibility in using the sidewalk along with street trees, and you can walk on the grates again. And you can actually put planter boxes along that edge intermittently as well, if necessary. However, when you have a bike lane or a parking lane against that curb edge, it's a little safer. It feels safer, and it actually is safer because you don't have speeding cars, you know, right next to the curb edge. So I think it makes sense to do it this way, to do the landscaping this way, for those reasons. And especially to create a wide sidewalk as wide as possible, up to 12 feet, 11 to 12 feet, let's say, which allows you to have an amenity zone along the building edges where you can have cafe seating, benches, planters, bike racks, those kind of things that make a sense of place along an urban corridor and make it comfortable and inviting and activate that corridor. So, if you could go back to that one more time, I'm indicating that to me, this concept meets the needs of the neighborhood district, and it provides the HOV lane. I want to say the T-Dome business district. I don't want to speak out of turn, but we maintain parking on both edges. We still provide the HOV lane that is required for funding. And we've made great strides in a pedestrian activated edges on both sides of the corridor. You got all the lanes you need, the 5 lanes of traffic. I think in my opinion, this seems to meet a lot of the criteria that's been brought forward in the past that you've shared. And so I will just leave it at that. Let's see what others think.
And I just want to add too that I think the chair is correct. I think it does meet the need of the district. But you know, based on feedback that we're going to get, I know from transit and from freight, and possibly even our traffic engineering section, they may want to see a wider lane at certain places. So there will be trade-offs. So I just want to get that out there too.
Sure.
So, hi. So, one of the things we've hit constantly is that when we have wider lanes, we get faster traffic. Everybody wants us is if you feel like you've got plenty of space, you go faster. And so we're trying to make this more pedestrian oriented. So if we can anyway slow, I know it was number 10 on the list of important things, but it also plays into the feeling of safety and the feeling of a people place as opposed to a freeway. So the narrower, the fewer lanes we can have and the narrower we can make the lanes, in my mind, the better. And so I think that would play into this concept that we're seeing right now. It looks like, looks too good to be true, but maybe it's not. Maybe we can move toward 20 is plenty and all the other things that we can make this neighborhood be more people friendly. I think, again, the HOV lane, it could be incorporated into this if we got rid of the width of the traffic lanes. Has there been, Mark, a recent traffic? I know that the freeway is still under construction, so it's really, we've talked about this forever. It's skewing the traffic counts from on Puyallup Avenue because people want to avoid going up into the construction on the freeway. And so for years now, Puyallup has gotten much more traffic than it ever did before. And maybe it's going to go back to the freeway and 509 when those are completed, when 167 is made to cross. And you can do 509 and get to 5 pretty simply down in 5. Is there a recent traffic update or projection that could show us that, Puyallup Avenue is not going to continue to be a freeway?
I do not have an updated traffic. We have not done any work on this project since 2018, really. I would put traffic counts and a review of our traffic data and conclusions in the design phase just to verify that we're moving forward with as accurate numbers as we can. I mean, they're not going to be 2016, 2017 levels, I would imagine. You know, they're going to be less, but at least they can look at our old data.
Yeah.
And, you know, see if it's reasonable.
Yeah. Well, I support this, the narrowing of lanes for not just that we can have other amenities included and added, but that it will slow traffic. And I think that's a good thing. We've been here for 20 years and I'd say 40 is about the average speed that most people travel through this neighborhood, and it's not safe or right, especially when trying to encourage pedestrian use and bicycles.
I agree.
The narrower the lane we can make, the better. You know, when you go to Europe and there's a 6-foot wide lane, people travel through, but they travel very slowly.
Right.
And you almost feel safe walking along with the traffic.
I agree. So I would make that recommendation and I would make that clarification in there. Because when you say narrower lanes, some other group may think, oh, you know, they want to use it for parking or use it for this or use it for that. No, you want narrow lanes because you want to use it as a traffic calming measure. So
yes,
that's an important comment to make. And I think it should be separate from the parking, any parking comments or recommendations you make.
Okay. Yeah.
I want to add to that, Mark. You know, there are methods, as you alluded to, for traffic calming. And one of them is narrower lanes, which is inherent, but you could also reduce the speed limit. I don't know. That's a possibility. The other one is to, at the intersections, create colored and stamped concrete patterns, which basically just allows you, tends to slow you down because it feels like a driving plaza, if you will, which a lot of urban centers do that. Mm-hmm. Albeit this, you'd have to start them early because of the speed. They'd be at the main intersections through the TOD district along the corridor. You'd have to, you know, say whatever it is, whatever your engineers come up with. But at the intersections, you could easily do that, which naturally slows people down.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, that could be part of our recommendation as well.
And, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, or if it ends up that we only get parking on one side, another thing to do that Dana Brown mentioned to me, we looked at other districts of the city, was do, you know, shift the parking from side to side, you know, over large areas, mm-hmm. but still you have this transition kind of a wave feeling as you're moving through this area. Instead of having it all in the north, it'd be a little on the north, a little on the south, and back on the north again. And the lanes would follow. So that's an idea too.
Don, go ahead.
Yeah, I really like the parking in both sides, and I think it's important to really try to keep it there in the core area. It provides a safety buffer for pedestrians. You're going to have people with kids, and you just look at areas. I think of Second Avenue up in Seattle and areas where the parking is there. Even though the street speed may be 30, some people going even faster, that buffer really creates a very important safety factor, a perceived safety factor. So I would really mm-hmm. encourage keeping the parking on both sides in the core area. I like the concept. I see the separation there from the parking area and the bike lanes. It shows that I think it's 3 feet, but you're showing a physical barrier that could probably be reduced down to 2 feet. It could be a decorative barrier. There are a lot of possibilities with this concept, and it does have the HOV transit still in it. So it makes it workable, I think, in terms of the grant. So I don't think we should muck around with it too much. I think we should have a strong recommendation in favor of it.
Now, keep Jenna? In mind, we have a required sidewalk width in this area of about 11 feet, the width. If we go below that, or if we choose to go below that, we would have to request a deviation. That deviation may or may not be approved. But I just wanted to put that out there.
What requirement is that, a zoning requirement?
Yeah, our sidewalk widths are dictated by the type of road, arterial, et cetera, or zoning as well. So, yeah. For example, and that's in the, we did put those widths in the frequently asked questions section of the handout. So take a look at that. I will tell you, I have the September 26, 2017 Transportation Commission letter where they made their recommendations on what we had at that time was just alternative 4. We really didn't lay it out like we did now. Mm-hmm. And they basically said, remove on-street parking between Pacific and Portland Avenues to allow for safer and more effective and efficient pedestrian, bicycle, and transit level of service, and relocate when applicable to side streets. So their recommendation would be to take all parking off Puyallup Avenue. So that's why I said, I mean, I think it's a valid recommendation based on a transportation master plan, the type of corridor it is, et cetera. But I also think when you formulate your recommendations, take a look at their recommendations. It's in the back of the appendix, or it's in one of the appendices in the back of Design Tech Memo 3. And that link was sent out earlier, and we can send them out again if you need them. But I think we really want to find a way to work together, find common ground, bring BTAG in as well, make sure everybody, pedestrians, bicyclists, freight, et cetera, all this is meeting their needs, or as best we can. Anyway.
So I listened to the Transportation Commission meeting earlier today. It was recorded. And their concern, again, when we go all the way back to that addendum that they added to the corridor study back in, was it 18 or 17? Anyway, the addendum was all about throughput and getting traffic through. It's all about moving traffic quickly. It was not, they're not addressing making this a people place. And I don't know, I also heard in that meeting that our charge is to help them or advise them, and then they will make, the Transportation Commission will make the recommendation to council or to whomever, not us. So it won't be that we're kind of equals to the city council. It will be that we're advising them and that they'll take it into consideration or not, and then they will advise council. Is that correct?
Well, you know, Josh Diekman and Jennifer Camerzell are probably better to speak to this than I am, but I will tell you that, you know, your group is in place for a reason. I think when I go to IPS, or whoever goes to IPS, or Infrastructure Planning Sustainability Committee of council members, all the recommendations are going to be presented, yours as well as theirs.
Okay.
Their recommendations, I mean, they're charged with somewhat enforcing all the plans we have in place, or making what's happening in the city in compliance with the plans we have in place. So I think the way you described your role is probably correct, but I think, you know, we're spending time on this for a reason. And yeah. Once we start design, we're going to be working together a lot for the next 2 years. And there's going to be trade-offs along the way, and everybody has to understand that.
Yeah. I guess I'd also like to ask, if I don't know if Pat Beard is here or available, economic development to weigh in on this, not just keeping the freight people happy or to keep the traffic moving quickly, but the potential for development in the area. I mean, that's what we are, is transportation-oriented development, not transportation. There are plenty of people here, Tina and Sue, who were representing the transportation agency and the traffic itself, but we're supposed to be trying to encourage development. And I think by what Don brought up, keeping people feeling safer in the neighborhood, it's such a huge thing when somebody's walking around trying to figure out whether they're going to open a store in a building, whether there's buses or trucks zooming by right next to the curb, or whether it's there's a buffer that they feel safe standing on a sidewalk, at least that it's a legally wide sidewalk. So that, there we go.
Yeah, and Rick, I am here. Staff will be involved from CED on Mark's planning committee going forward, giving staff comments. I personally don't think it's appropriate for me to give the committee comments. We want to hear your comments and recommendations. But definitely the reason that other departments include us is so that we can give that economic and community development perspective. And I think we're listened to it with a great deal of respect.
Okay. Pat, congratulations, by the way, on taking over the Foss Waterway leadership. Being in that role, that's critical. The D Street overpass, the bridge, bringing all the people, all the residents and all the people who use the Foss Waterway to the dome and to transit, that is almost like a whole nother development. All the people that are walking over the D Street overpass and coming into the neighborhood. And I think that's part of you representing the Foss Waterway now have to inform us as to how many people are coming from the Foss Waterway to the Dome District, to the Dome, to the transit facilities that we have. So if you could get with us on that, I know, you know, off the top of my head, I know how many people live on the waterway, but if you could get us hard facts, it would be really appreciated that way. And I'm not talking about people driving over the bridge. I'm talking about on reasonable days, not like today, people walking over the bridge to get to the transit possibilities that we have.
Okay. Thank you, Janice, could you provide your comments?
I just want to look at that C Street diagram, if I could. I was a little bit confused by that. On C Street, it was the other one that was showing a proposed, the previous slide. Okay, that one at the top. It says it's been developed. So there looks like it's a big parking lot, right?
Uh-huh.
That's a six-story building with no parking with 152 residents. You able to put actually a diagram showing the existing? Because I think it's kind of important to show that.
And that's why that note is on there. It says this location has been developed. It's been built.
But it doesn't say what it is.
You should call it out as the Coase development.
Yeah, we can put however many units are on there.
I think it would help people visually to know that that is a six-story building without parking.
Right.
With 152 residents. I think that's kind of what we've been working towards through the sub-area plan to achieve that, bringing that into the district, and the importance of promoting the commercial development that a project like that brings to this area, and talking about placemaking and bringing more pedestrians to the Dome District using transit. I mean, it's something that we're all kind of working towards. So just having a label there been developed, I don't think it really gets people to understand how that contributes to the district and how thoughtful it should be, you know, going forward with that number of people using that little area.
Okay.
And how important the parking is in front of that building to, you know, encourage the future commercial use that would represent.
Thank you. Go ahead, Carrie.
I said more people is going to be more dogs too, because one in four households has a dog. So we need to keep that in mind when we're reviewing our landscaping and sidewalks and grills and things like that. They need little patches of places to go too.
Yes.
Oh, I had one other question. When you were studying the traffic from G to D, mm-hmm. When you had your traffic planners, Mark, the traffic, you know, that D Street to going westbound takes the traffic to the port a lot, and it does get really buggered up. But it changes from D to Pacific going westbound. Is that taken into account?
What exactly are you saying changes from D to Pacific?
Well, it's less traffic. That corner there at D and Puyallup.
Yes, well, we did do that. We took traffic counts at all the major intersections along the way and some of the side streets as well.
And so did they study how that changes from D to Pacific?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Any other comments or perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, there were People for Public Places years ago. I did a workshop with them. And I think in New York, 13-foot, if I recall the statistic, a 13-foot sidewalk could move 15,000 to 20,000 people an hour in a city like New York. So I would like to think that there's nothing sacrosanct about 13 feet, especially if you have a bicycle lane or bicycle track as a buffer and parking you should really be able to be flexible on the width of the street. The other thing, if you're going to narrow it, I think the preference should be keep the width on the sunny side of the street, because that's where a lot of pedestrians are going to gravitate on a nice day if there's seating and other things there. If you had to sacrifice some sidewalk. The other thing, Chair, I was going to ask, are you looking for a recommendation today, or is that something that we're looking at the next meeting?
Well, it sounds like we'd have to do a special meeting around the 11th of January if we're going to make a recommendation to the Transportation Commission by the 20th.
Okay.
So unless we can come to a consensus in the next 5 minutes or so, which I'm not sure we can, but I kind of have a feeling of where this group is headed.
Chair, and, can I?
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Can I? I mean, I'm hearing a pretty decent amount of concurrence, maybe with some specific information on various components of recommendations about traffic calming and things like that. But your next meeting, your next regular meeting is actually scheduled for January 18th. And so I'm not sure if there is a lot of agreement here, whether or not it would be infeasible to put together a draft recommendation and have that discussion at your regular meeting on the 20th or on the 18th and not necessarily need a special meeting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Brian. I'm sorry. January 18th is a holiday.
Yes.
Oh, well, gee whiz.
So yeah, exactly.
So the idea was the 11th was instead of the 18th?
No, the regular meeting has been rescheduled from 18th to 25th. So we're thinking about before Transportation Commission's January 20th meeting to have our recommendation so there's a need for a special meeting, which is an additional meeting on January 11th. So that is the game plan. As of now.
Well, I tried, so looks like you're back to the special meeting. So I guess that's a question to the group about the viability of a special meeting on the 11th.
Chair, if I may, I'm going to go ahead and throw something on the table and correct me, anybody, if you will. Like Brian just indicated, I think we've heard a lot of concurrence among the group, among the people who have spoken. What is being asked from Public Works is a recommendation from TODAC to support the city's effort in accepting and securing the $2.1 million grant that's been awarded to the city for the design phase of the project. So in response, TODAC, I think, may have three options. One, support the effort, support the scope of work as originally included in the grant application. Two, support the scope of work with additional comments. And those comments may include in the design of a project, incorporate complete streets, traffic calming, and other pedestrian and bicycle-friendly treatments, and attend to parking issues, and preserve transit HOV operation. The third option the group can have is remain silent, meaning we're not making any recommendation whatsoever. And you could have the fourth option, which is oppose, but unless you really have a strong reason why you want to be opposed, against the city's effort in securing the grant, that is not an option. So three options. If in case the group can decide on one of the options and authorize the chair, vice chair, and staff to work a letter of recommendation accordingly, if you can do that today, then we may not need to have a special meeting. But if we need additional discussions and so we can come to a conclusion with the letter, perhaps reviewing a draft letter, then we may need that meeting on January 11th to do that. So.
Okay. Thank you, Lee Wong. I think, well, I'd like to just ask the group if we could, I for one would support number two, which you stated was to support the scope of the work per the grant, including the HOV lane with additional comments. And that could include comments such as parking on both sides, traffic calming, the pedestrian as wide sidewalks as much as possible, pedestrian oriented, the landscaping. We can make multiple comments regarding our wishes. And if the group today would agree to that, I'd be willing to start the draft along with Vice Chair Erickson and the city staff to draft our letter. And I don't know how to do that without asking for ayes and nays, because we can't really see everybody's hands raised. But I would like to motion, if I could do that, that we prepare such a draft letter with supporting that concept number two. Does anybody object to that? Let's go that route. Does anybody object to that idea?
Somebody would need to second it as a motion first.
Yeah, I was going to second it.
Okay, thank you.
I would add one caveat on it. I would suggest that the diagram that we've been talking about be an attachment, and we can say that we think that embodies those principles that we're putting forth in the letter.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay. And we could also state that additional angled parking along the side streets is desired.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can I ask a clarifying question about what feedback on this letter would look like? So what this process would look like? Thank you.
Well, we did our first recommendation letter for the Tacoma Dome area station. I don't know how much of that you've seen, but it would basically recommend, it appears we have to go through the Transportation Commission first, but it would recommend to the City Council and the Mayor and the Transportation Commission and the Planning Commission, I believe, and maybe a couple other departments, of what our group's recommendation is regarding this corridor.
So, Chair, I wonder if it would be possible to maybe have a draft of the letter put together by like January 8th and then sent out to the whole group for them, for everybody to have a chance to provide some individual comments. So we can't really have a meeting by email, but everybody could provide their individual comments back, and then those could be incorporated and the letter could be finalized and sent off.
I think that's possible. If we need a meeting instead on the 11th, we could, I guess, play that by ear.
Well, I guess worst case scenario is if everybody has so many objections to the draft letter that there's not comfort in sending it, then it doesn't get sent in time and it gets sent on the 25th and people deal with it.
Right.
And I don't think the world's going to come to an end. If the worst case scenario is it goes on the 25th instead of the 20th, I think people will survive. But I heard a lot of concurrence, and my guess is putting a draft together and letting people review and comment on it can probably get in a pretty good spot.
I did too. So one more time, does anybody object to that approach? Okay, so is the motion approved?
Aye.
Rick?
I'm good.
Good. So approved. We're going to do a draft letter recommending support of the scope of the Puyallup Avenue corridor based on that, I believe it's parking both sides cross-section, along with additional comments. That's the general path we're going to take. That's great. I'm going to share the screen for another minute and go back to the agenda really quick. I'd like to, since we're running late, I'd like to defer the rest of our agenda items, if that's okay with you, Lee Huang.
The chair of BP Tech, Bicycle and Pedestrian Technical Advisory Group, is here with us, and she would like to maybe just a couple of minutes talk about the letter that they have prepared to send to Sound Transit. I think they have sent it already. And sounds just for our information, would that be okay?
Yeah, that sounds good. You can have 5 minutes, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we just wanted to run this letter by you guys, make sure that you saw it, saw our list of suggested improvements for Puyallup Ave and Portland, and highlight our priorities. It was broadly distributed, and so we just wanted to make sure that you guys had a chance to review it and were aware of our position. So it's in the packet. I'm hopeful that you guys have read it ahead of time, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. Thank you for carving out a few minutes here. But essentially, we do feel that there needs to be drastic improvements on Puyallup Avenue and Portland for it to be a friendly destination for people that are arriving and leaving not in a car. So, and we ultimately also want to make sure that safety improvements are made on the ground before we are putting efforts into a very costly overpass. So the overpass to us is a nice to have, but it's, since it's not something that will be utilized by all people accessing the station, we really want to see the ground improvements done first, and then we can look at something like an overpass. So
thank you. And Jennifer, you're recommending, you're making comments on both the Puyallup Avenue project and the Portland Avenue station, correct?
Yes, as close as we can, considering that the Portland one hasn't quite been located. Or excuse me, the Puyallup Ave one.
Right. Portland Ave, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take your letter into consideration as we do our recommendations.
Very good. Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. With that, I think we're going to adjourn. And everyone have a safe and happy holiday and happy new year.